You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Friday. We've made it to the weekend. Friday, March 4th, Auburn basketball looking to take home the regular season championship outright tomorrow against South Carolina. No sharing. Jacob, how's it going, man?
It's going great, man. Like you said, it is Friday. The weekend is here. Spring break is next week for myself. My final spring break until I graduate, man. So, got to take advantage of it. Weather's supposed to be really nice. It's nice today. A lot of Auburn sports this weekend. I'm really excited to get out and take it all in.
Joining us on today's program, as he does most Fridays, my boy, Lancelot. Lance Daw, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing great, Noah. Really excited about the gymnastics meet later tonight. Really excited to just be in town.
Have you been to one yet?
I've been to one. I went to one a couple of weeks ago. I believe it was Auburn, Missouri. And some people may get onto me for this. I've literally never watched gymnastics before in my entire life. And within like 15 minutes, I was like, okay, I think I've got the hang of it. And it's like, I don't want to like knock on like the way that it is scored, but like, it seems pretty easy to gauge who's good at what, who's not good at what, why Suni Lee is clearly one of the best athletes on this planet. It was like clear to see how it worked. And it was fun, man. The environment was incredible.
Packed out always.
Oh, yeah. Suni Lee is on another level when you watch her compete in gymnastics.
And she's different.
And let's just be honest. None of us are gymnastics enthusiasts and know what exactly we're talking about. But you can tell the difference when she's doing a routine on bars or beam or on the floor versus when any other girl does it. It's so smooth and elegant and effortless. It's unbelievable to watch her.
I'll say this, though. What seems so subjective to me are the floor routines. And I know, obviously, there's a lot of technicality that goes into, like, the flips and different things like that and dancing and stuff like that, but it just seems like you could score most floor routines just like a variety of different ways. And for me personally, this may just be my thing, I would like critique the song that they chose. I'd be like, I wasn't really feeling that.
That seems
one,
like you.
It's like, yeah,
I don't think
really
that matched the vibe that she was putting down on the floor routine. I don't think those quite went together.
But they do judge the song because they have to be in like rhythm with the song, and the movements they do have to be like on the beat drops and stuff. So it does matter a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I was like, yeah, I wasn't really feeling Bruno Mars for that routine. Like legitimately, but like, seriously, though, I think it was a great time, and I'm really looking forward to it tonight.
Of course, Auburn baseball in action tonight against Rhode Island. In action all weekend. They have a doubleheader tomorrow, and they'll play on Sunday, a four-game series against the Rams from the Northeast, coming to warmer weather where it's probably a 40-degree jump from Rhode Island to what it's going to be here on the plains this weekend. Beautiful weather in Auburn, Alabama, as well as Auburn basketball tomorrow looking to win the regular season championship outright with a win tomorrow against South Carolina. So much going on here on the plains, and we're going to talk about all of it here on the Friday edition of On the Line. If you want to call in, phone lines are open all show long, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. I don't want to linger on this too long because we got after it yesterday, but we are only 2 days removed now, day and a half removed from when Auburn played Mississippi State on Wednesday night, and we saw this basketball season brought to its knees momentarily. Auburn did find their way to battle it back and keep their hopes of winning the regular season championship outright alive. Lance, your thoughts on what happened Wednesday night, because you know how optimistic I am about this team. It seems like there are fewer and fewer of me out there with the game, but I thought there were a lot of good things that happened on Wednesday night, despite the 12-minute run that Mississippi State almost came back and won the game.
Well, I think one of the characteristics of Auburn's Final Four team and then the season following that with all of the seniors on the squad was the resiliency that those two teams had. And it's very characteristic of a Bruce Pearl team to be resilient and to be able to fight back. The season with Sharif Cooper last year, Auburn just kind of choked late in games, and then we've gotten to see at different times this season where Auburn has had those moments where they've had an opportunity to win a really close game, and sometimes they pulled it out, Georgia, Missouri, but sometimes they've had moments where they've completely fallen apart in the second half. I'll say the resiliency that Auburn showed against the Bulldogs was impressive, but I'll also say this. Auburn was up by 19 points at one point in that first half. You have to be able to capitalize and keep your foot on the gas in the second half. I really loved the guard play that we saw in the first half. Did not like what we saw in the second. I believe Auburn was up by 12 at halftime, and Auburn was up by 14 with about a minute left, and I turned to somebody I was watching the game with. I'm like, I really hope this doesn't turn out to be the Georgia game all over again, where Auburn just blows a massive lead and the opposing team goes on a run. That happened, but Auburn was able to fight back and win the game in overtime. Katie Johnson, man, like, hide the women, hide the children. Like, Katie Johnson is coming to town, and he is going ballistic. Loved the energy that he brought in OT.
But isn't it sad, as Auburn fans this season, that when you have a double-digit lead at halftime, we're worried about the team blowing it, and yeah. We know that it's coming. And here's another thing. I saw a video last night that Auburn basketball tweeted out, like the highlight video from the win against Mississippi State, and they had a clip of Bruce Pearl in the locker room at halftime. Do you know what he told the guys? He said, look, we're up by double digits right now, but they're going to come back and they're going to make this the game, and we have to be ready. Why is that the message? Why not the message be, we're up by 12, let's win this thing by 30? Why is that not the message? Why is it, well, we got to prepare because they're going to come back and make this a ball game. We got to be ready and win. That kind of turned me the wrong way a little bit in a message from Bruce Pearl. Not something that you normally hear from a head coach, but, and I understand where he's coming from, but at the same time, my thing is, you're up by double digits. Let's go in here and beat them by 30. Why do we have to prepare for them to come back?
I agree with you on your messaging, and that probably wasn't phrased or put in the correct light. I would agree with you. That wording does bother me a little bit. But I think the heart of the message is, don't take your foot off the pedal. Don't sleep. These guys are going to come at you in the second half. I think that's what he's trying to get across, is you guys have to come out in the second half and play with intensity to avoid them ultimately taking a lead on you, them ultimately pulling out in front, which obviously they were not successful in doing that. And I do agree with you. The messaging there does seem a little off. Why not just say, hey guys, let's go out there with the same intensity that we had in the first half and let's bury these guys. Honestly, with the way that Auburn ended the first half, and Lance, I want your thoughts on this, they ended the half with the announcer saying that Mississippi State was fortunate to only be down 12. I think I'd be going into the locker room saying, guys, we didn't end the half well. We need to bury these guys in the second half. They're already trying to make the comeback.
I agree with what both of y'all said there about Pearl and the messaging. And obviously, Jacob wasn't saying this, and I'll say this here. I don't want to sit here and criticize Pearl as a coach. That's not what Jacob was saying at all. Like, his ability to coach. But I completely agree, and this is actually something that I was talking about at halftime, is that Auburn needs to go out here in the second half and finish this and make this a blowout. They need to go out there and go on a run. They need to establish themselves, because time and time and time again in conference play, Auburn has started the first half off slow and they've started the second half off slow. They have to be able to get off to quicker starts, build some momentum here, because we're at the end of the regular season. This is postseason time. This is peaking time. You've got to be able to find some rhythm in the second half, and it was really, really important that Auburn won this game, but I wanted to see a little bit more intensity coming out of the gates in the second half. And to your point, Noah, just talking about the end of the first half, the announcer was right. Mississippi State was very, very great, or very lucky to have only been down by 12, because Auburn's guards and their shooting in the first half was really, really solid. Why it disappeared in the second half, not entirely sure. Why Jabari Smith, for a lull there, just did not get to touch the basketball, I don't understand.
Guard play.
But a lot of it comes back to, I've written about this so much over on Sports Illustrated, wrote about it on USA Today whenever I was with them, and I've talked about this with multiple different people. You've said it on your show. Everybody acknowledges the guard play for Auburn has been incredibly inconsistent down the stretch here. and we need all three of our guys, Katie Johnson, Zepp Jasper, and Wendell Green, we need all of those guys to step up and be more efficient. I'm not asking for a perfect game. I'm not asking for like 2 of 4 from the field. I'm not asking for like 50% shooting every single night from these guys, but I'm asking for something better than 3 of 12 with 4 turnovers, right? I'm asking for just more consistency. If we're going to be one of the top 5 teams in the nation and we're going to make a Final Four run, our guards have to step up. And we've talked about this before on the show as well. A characteristic of Bruce Pearl teams, talking about how they've been resilient, they also struggle. A characteristic of a Bruce Pearl team is they struggle with high ball pressure, kind of pushing your guards out closer to the half court line and making them operate in situations where they can't necessarily get into a groove. They don't have a lot of room to work. They have a difficult time getting downhill because they're smaller than opposing teams typically at the guard position. Auburn has got to figure out a way to get out of that funk and maybe get the ball to Jabari Smith a little bit more and let him work so that it makes opposing teams adjust.
And the thing I've been saying with the guard play all season long is between Wendell Green, Zepp Jasper, and KD Johnson, what's the formula I've said that they have to do? 2 of the 3 of those guys have to have a good game. If 2 of 3 of them
efficient game,
it doesn't have to be a 30-point performance from them.
Right.
But if 2 out of the 3 of those guys can have an efficient game with a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, have, you know, maybe 10 points and just play good basketball, if 2 out of the 3 of those guys play well, Auburn's going to win basketball games. But right now, Auburn's getting 1 of those 3 guys. It's either 1 game of KD Johnson or 1 game of Wendell Green, which we haven't seen in a long time. But against Mississippi State, besides the 12-minute lull, you saw Zepp Jasper and KD Johnson play fairly well. And look what happened. Auburn won the basketball game.
I'm going to come to Wendell Green's defense here today. Now, I have criticized his play for about a week now. I think most people have. And I'm not excusing his play over the last several weeks. He's definitely got to improve. But I do think against Mississippi State, we saw him rein it in a little bit. He only took 4 threes.
He had a 7-to-4 ratio.
An assist-to-turnover ratio is what you're talking about. He had 7 assists to 4 turnovers, right? That's exactly the direction that I was about to go. He still made key passes to players. 7 assists is nothing for us to turn our nose at. I think he was much more accountable for buckets than he has been over the last 2-3 weeks, especially in some of those hostile road environments. Now, is he still shooting the basketball well? No, but I mentioned this on yesterday's show. I think part of Wendell's problem right now, he's not scoring when he gets to the basket. Mm-hmm. He's not finishing through traffic. He's not finishing through contact. Likewise, I don't know if he's getting a fair shot from the referees when he gets to the rim. There are a few times where I'm like, I think he probably deserved the foul called there, and I think it's getting to that point now with KD Johnson where it's kind of like a situation where the boy who cried wolf, this team was so good at drawing contact, was so good at generating fouls because they played into the contact, that now when they legitimately get fouled, refs aren't giving them those calls anymore.
Well, KD's a different example. He makes me frustrated at sometimes because he'll go in for a layup and then he'll stop and he'll wait for the defender to come and then he'll jump with the defender. Like, dude, go in for the layup. But what? There's also times where, yeah, he does get hacked and he doesn't make it, doesn't get the foul call. And same thing with Wendell Green. But you can't just, you can't make that your excuse because everybody deals with that in the game of basketball. You can't just, well, I didn't get the foul call. So.
I don't know. I'm going to be real. This is not me complaining about officiating.
Well, we've had
this discussion.
I do
think Auburn gets an unfair shake because of how talented they are. It's Shaq syndrome. Refs are so unaccustomed to seeing players like Walker Kessler be able to block shots that inside, internally, they automatically think it's going to be a foul. And internally, they've already blown the whistle before they've actually blown the whistle. And Lance, you have some experience with officials. You yourself are not official, but you know people that have officiated games. And I know you can confirm that with me, that there is preconceived biases. There are the transition from the brain to actually making the call, it's something that the human can't control. And internally, if you've already blown the whistle, you're going to physically blow the whistle. And I think Auburn benefits from preconceived biases. Biases may not be the right word, because I don't think people are doing it because it's Auburn. I think it's just the refs internally, they have this idea of what a foul looks like, or they have this idea of that, oh, that's going to be a foul based on the positioning, but then it was a clear block, right? or it was clearly he got to the rim and he was hacked. He didn't miss it. He wasn't actually indeed trying to draw contact, or he didn't generate the contact. I just think there's a lot of times where this Auburn team, because of how talented that it is, it does seem like Auburn's getting an unfair shake.
I'll say, to cover everything that y'all just discussed, to go back to Auburn finishing at the rim, hosting the Locked On Kentucky podcast just a couple weeks ago, I had somebody on, Hoops Insight, Sean Venzel, and I asked him to help me break down Tennessee, because Kentucky was about to play the Volunteers, and we got around to talking about Auburn for a little bit, and he noted that Auburn has guards that don't finish well at the rim, and he said part of that has to do with how physical opposing teams handle Auburn at the rim. And so to your point, sure, Auburn may need to do a better job of finishing at the rim, but at the same time, and I know officiating in college basketball has been suspect all season, but for Auburn to continue to do what they do, for Wendell Green and Katie Johnson to continue to attack the rim, which they should, but the way that Johnson does it, expecting to get a foul call, he has to adjust that. Because we're over 30 games into the season now, he has to adjust to the fact that those calls aren't going to be made all the time. Also, something I wanted to
point out. It's time to quit hunting for those calls, too. Yes. Just go and get a bucket.
Exactly. To your point and to Jacob's point, just make the layup. Stop seeking out contact, make a layup. And then something else I wanted to discuss. So I sent this to you, I think, a couple of weeks ago. There was a chart put out recently by some college basketball statistics Twitter account or something like that. I saved it to my phone. It's SEC home and away foul splits in conference play, and it shows which teams have foul advantages at home, have foul advantages on the road, which teams have both, and then which teams have disadvantages both at home and on the road. Auburn currently, right now, has the second worst foul disadvantage on the road. They almost get 6 more fouls called on them than they do on average on the season. So if Auburn's getting called for 10 fouls a game, they get called for 16 on the road. And if they have a slight advantage at home. They get about one less call a game. So if they're averaging 10, they get called for 9 at home.
But you talk about the difference between those two, between home and away. That's a pretty big gap there.
That's a pretty big gap.
And that's 7 fouls. That's a 7 foul difference.
Right.
And I think a lot of it has to do with a couple of things. The one, what you mentioned, Noah, Walker Kessler. We've talked about that all year long. He gets foul calls, 2 or 3 a game, that are not fouls. They just call it because he's a big guy. But then also there's times where Auburn, off of an opponent's rebound, what do? They're swiping at the ball instead of just running back and playing defense. They get those stupid fouls from 80 feet away from the basket, and that cannot happen.
Tennessee game, Katie Johnson taps. I can't remember who was shooting the shot from the corner. It may have been Kennedy Chandler or Zakai Ziegler. I think it was Ziegler. Tennessee game, Katie Johnson touches him, the slightest of touches on the chest, but dude, you touched him.
It's a foul.
You can't touch him in the process of shooting. By the book, that's a foul. You can't do it. And the KD's like, oh, what did I do? It's like, you touched him, dude. He's shooting a 3. Why did you even reach out to touch somebody? Like, up, dude, straight up. It's not that difficult.
We see that happen a lot with Jalen Williams, Devin Cambridge, those types of guys. When they go and crash the boards and they don't get the ball, then they swipe at it as they're running, and most of the time they're fouling him, and those cannot be fouls. It's a reach-in foul,
and it gets called a lot.
It gets called, and they add up, and when teams hit the bonus halfway through the half, you're going to be in trouble, especially in the NCAA tournament if you're Auburn.
I also want to say one more thing here, just to go back to what I was talking about with the Kentucky podcast. So obviously Kentucky played Arkansas a week or so ago. It was a phenomenal game. I got to preview that game on an episode recently, and I noted, looking at this chart, that Arkansas actually has the largest home and away advantage in the SEC in terms of fouls called, both at home and on the road. And I noted
that
they have the best home advantage. They actually have almost 4.5 less calls at home on them. And then also you have to account for like charges and stuff like that on the opposing team. And I noted in the episode, I'm like, well, you could say that they just simply foul less at home. They're more disciplined at home. It's a more comfortable environment. Or they also get a mix of that and then just they get calls at home. And I said, I'm not going to sit here and criticize SEC officiating and saying that there's something going on with Arkansas, but they just simply have the best advantage at home and on the road. And then after the game, wouldn't you know it, Arkansas averages 17 fouls per game, got called for 13, right at 4 less than they do on average. And I noted in the episode, I'm like, there were a couple different instances where there could have been fouls called, And I had somebody comment just the other day, and this was after the Arkansas-LSU game that happened a couple of days ago.
Were they big mad?
And they said, what I said was like, don't you think that it's just Arkansas getting, or don't you think it's just Arkansas fouling less at home? And I was like, go watch the end of that LSU-Arkansas game and tell me if you still have that same opinion. Because it does kind of look like it's a mix. It's definitely not Arkansas just plays better at home. It's also like they just get calls at home. So
well, that's part of it. That's what we were talking about. And I wanted to lean on some of your experience with people that you know that referee. It's the reality. We're human beings.
Exactly.
It is impossible to not have an internal subconscious bias. It's impossible
emotion.
To not have exactly emotions. It's impossible to not have a subconscious internal instinct on what you're going to do. And oftentimes, why do you see when someone's hustling down first baseline in baseball, the first base coach saying safe, or you know, every time he's saying safe, it's because he's trying to put that in the brain of the umpire. I mean, part of it, it's saying he's safe, right? He's trying to advocate for his teammate, but I guarantee you that has something to do with placing that subconsciously in a human being's mind.
Yep.
Because oftentimes, what comes to your mind first, that's probably what you're going to divert to, especially in a close 50-50 situation.
Exactly. And I'll say this, based on interactions I've had with people that I know that have officiated in the past, there are times where you go into a game with a preconceived bias. And then also, you may, y'all may know this just by simply
maybe
watching.
Bias isn't the right word, but sure. Scouting report. Like, you
yes,
know, you
sure.
know how the other team plays. You've seen them before. You know what they're like. These refs know everybody.
So, for instance, with like LSU, you know LSU fouls a lot and they play very physical. And if I'm an official going into a game, I'm telling Will Wade, hey, I know your guys foul a lot. I know they play very handsy. I know they like to check people. You need to keep that in line this game, or else I'm going to call every single thing I see in the first half. And the other team's going to be in the double bonus 7 or 8 minutes into the game. That almost happened in the Kentucky game first go around, by the way. But also, I'll say this. Not only are there like preconceived notions before a game happens, coaches and players can do stuff that influences a way a game is called. So, for instance, if a player is dogging an official, dogging an opposing player, if a coach is dogging an official, they're going to keep that in the back of their mind, and so they're going to call
not intentionally sometimes
right.
either, I
sometimes
don't think.
Sometimes not intentionally, but there's that in the back of their mind, and so they tend to sometimes for a stretch of the game call tighter on the team that was bad-mouthing the official. It happens. Like you said, we're just human beings. It's like things like that happen. So
I think you would be very naive to believe that doesn't happen.
Right, that's what I was saying. It was like y'all may just like watching the way, and I'm not saying Bruce Pearl, it affects how officials call Auburn games. But like you see how animated and energetic Bruce Pearl is. That has to affect officials one way or another.
And to be honest with you, I'm okay, and this is a hot take, but I am okay. I don't know if you guys watched the Texas A&M Alabama game the other day. Buzz Williams got a tech within 3.5 minutes of the game starting. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. If you want to set the record straight with a coach, mm-hmm. and you know it's going to get on your nerves, or you know that it's going to it's disciplined. It's saying, no, look, I'm in control here. We're going to do this in a respectful way. If you've got issues with me, there's a way to talk to me about it, and you're not going to rag me the whole game, right? And I like Buzz Williams. I really do. He's one of my favorite coaches in the game of college basketball. But I'm okay. And Bruce got a tech really quickly in the Vanderbilt game. Bruce, when he got the tech, and I think I saw him say this, so take this for what it's worth, but Bruce said something along the lines of, I am tired of this, right? And it's like, officials, I think it's okay for them early to set the tone. You see this in other sports, namely soccer and basketball. They're two similar sports in the way that things are officiated because there's so much gray area. There's so much, you know, the lines are blurred between, you know, what contact is allowed and what contact isn't, because in theory, a lot of contact happens in basketball, right?
Yep.
But it doesn't always get called. What contact is deemed a foul, right? And or even the official's opinion of what contact is deemed appropriate or not, it's changed on a year-to-year basis from the top down from their superiors, right? And so when there's that much, when it's that arbitrary, you kind of have to set a tone. And I'm okay with officials setting a tone early in order to keep control in a basketball game so that it doesn't ruin it in the later stages.
Yep.
Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll keep talking college basketball here with Lance Dawn on the line.
Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goetz, Noah Gardner with you today on the Friday edition of the show. We've got Lance Dahl in the studio with us today, as he does most Fridays. Gentlemen, we've been talking about Auburn basketball, and then a little bit of college basketball officiating.
I'm convinced this is two out of three of our last Friday shows that we've talked about refs in, like, detail.
It probably is. I know. We were just talking about
this happened recently.
Yeah, it happened a couple of weeks ago. But in the point of the matter is, it's still an issue, right? It's still an issue, and we've been talking about it. And the point that I wanted to make to continue on with this conversation before we head to the national break is that referees with the biasy, if that's what you want to call it, when they go into an arena, they get affected, and maybe subconsciously, with the crowd and with momentum and those types of things. And I know I brought up the point the last time we had this discussion was the fact of how a charge is called and the actual physical hand motions that they do. They get to be so into it when they make those calls. And I think a lot of that has a lot to do with how a referee or an official calls a game.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic point. And I wanted to mention it when you were talking about the baseball scenarios. Like, you notice how, like, into it sometimes baseball umpires get into a game. It's just like whenever they call a strike or whenever, like, it's a strikeout. Man, if I were an umpire and I got to do that and, like, finish a game, that would be so hype. Like, I understand, like, these are just people. Like, they
finish you.
Exactly.
Ball's in the dirt. Lance just says, yep, got him.
Got him, boy.
Get out of here.
Finish you.
You notice, like, if y'all have ever watched John Boy on YouTube, sometimes he'll do, like, breakdowns of, like, explaining, like, yeah, different umpires and stuff. It's like, he'll even point out, it's like that I think there was one video where, like, an umpire preemptively called a third strikeout twice because he was, like, just so into it. It was like, to your point, Noah, like, earlier, it's like, people are human. People are really going to get invested into it. And sometimes, you know, bad calls come out of that, but at the same time, I completely understand getting invested into something like that.
I'm waiting for the day that a college basketball official goes full Michael Jackson on a charge call and goes something like, ooh!
Halfway down the court.
Exactly. Yes, that's good.
But
that's
all
good.
Of those things have an impact. And like we said, you would be wrong if you don't think so, that all of these things have an impact on how a human official calls not just a basketball game, a baseball game, football, whatever it might be. And so, gentlemen, what about electronic officials?
Stop that. The only sport that could maybe work to a degree is baseball.
It should be.
And a lot of people hate that.
It should be in baseball.
Because the people who love baseball are the same people who are like, how do you use a computer?
Have y'all talked about the lockdowns at all?
Or not really.
Not a whole lot. Not really at all, honestly.
To be fair, I think this is bad for the game.
It's sad is what it is.
It's bad for the game. There are going to be people that were on the fence that just kind of keep up with it on a touch-and-go basis. And is that really your audience? Maybe not. But you probably are going to lose those folks. But
I was not a Braves fan until last May.
Not a Braves fan again?
No, I texted somebody a couple days ago. I was like, I really need some Braves baseball right now.
That's
like,
fair.
I need the season to come back.
Let's take a quick break. More of Lance Dahl here with us on the line when we come back.
Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today on the Friday edition of the show. It is March 4th. Conference tournaments, some have started for college basketball, but the major conferences are just around the corner. We'll be starting up next week. Of course, Auburn basketball has one more game tomorrow against South Carolina.
Man, what you talking about? I'm all over Campbell Gardner-Webb tonight,
baby.
That's
what I'm saying, man. I'm giving you some credit. I'm giving your formula a shout out.
Fighting camels against the running bulldogs. I'm on it tonight.
You had to look up those mascots.
No, I already knew them.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. Lance will tell you, I am an encyclopedia.
Listen, Jacob.
An index of every single nickname in Division I collegiate athletics. Southern Utah Thunderbirds. Let's go.
I want to shout out former intern Sting here for a second. Something that Noah and Sting would do on occasion during breaks is Sting would pull up a list of, like, all of these Division I and II universities and just give the name of the university, and Noah would just know the mascot off the top of his head. Like, they would do that.
Now, granted, there were a couple that I got hazy on, like, are they a Bengal or are they?
Well, there were a couple where you got.
Are they
host.
A fighting Bengal? Like, what are they?
There were a couple where you got host where, like, the mascot had changed somehow.
It had.
Like,
there were a couple that had changed.
But, like, I could probably count on both hands the amount of times that Noah missed a university. Like, they did, like, so many different universities, and you get it every.
You didn't
time.
Know that, did you?
That's impressive.
This man's like, you had to look those up. No, I didn't.
UNLV.
I knew it. No, I didn't, boy.
They're the running Rebs, man.
Okay, all right.
They're not just the running Rebels. They're the running Rebs, gentlemen.
All right, impressive, impressive. But, hey, let's break down Auburn basketball's game tomorrow against South Carolina, because Auburn currently, Auburn basketball, they have a share of the regular season SEC title. But if they win tomorrow, fellas, they're the outright regular season SEC champs. And so, Lance, I want to ask you first, what can Auburn expect from this South Carolina team tomorrow in Neville Arena? It will become Neville Arena officially tomorrow.
Oh, it's already been named today. The ceremony was today. Now they will do it. Well, they will do it in game tomorrow, but there is a ceremony going on. If it hasn't concluded yet, there is a ceremony going on right now.
Okay.
Outside of Neville Arena.
Interesting. I thought the signage all of that was they changed the name on the building like last week.
Well, no, there's a legit naming ceremony going on right now if it hasn't finished.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I thought they were doing that during the game. I guess they'll like promote it during the game or whatever. But anyway, Lance, South Carolina Auburn tomorrow. Your initial thoughts and what can Auburn expect from South Carolina?
Well, say this about the Gamecocks. So obviously Auburn was their first SEC opponent of the season. Auburn ran all over them. Wendell Green had a phenomenal game. South Carolina started off 1-4 in conference play. I sort of discarded the Gamecocks. I've not really thought about them, not really paid attention to them after that point. They are somehow 18-11 and over 500 in conference play right now. They are 9-8. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't really know how they've done it, but I'm really impressed with the way that Frank Martin has gotten his team to play well over these final few games. They beat LSU, beat Mississippi State in a four-game winning streak here recently. I don't think they're phenomenal, but they are pretty decent. And actually, I will say this.
They're gritty.
I think that is very true, but also at the same time, like, I think they're also, that's a good word to describe their defense. They're very, very gritty on defense.
They are the grit of the SEC.
I would say that they're similar to LSU in the fact that they, I don't think they foul as much as LSU, but they are very, very physical on the defensive end. They're very handsy. They will foul you. And we've seen this at different times in the Frank Martin era with South Carolina, where they will attempt to put a team on the free throw line to see if they can win a game there. And one way or another, I think at different times, his defensive style has worked. And it's really worked down the stretch. And when you think about it, it makes sense, right? All of these teams in the back half of their conference schedule, they're probably gassed, physically worn out a little bit. South Carolina is going to come in. They're going to bring the intensity, and they're going to force those teams to play as sound as possible. That led to four straight wins for the Gamecocks here just recently. And then also you look on KenPom, 31st in the nation in defensive efficiency. I would say that if you look at the numbers, defense is the way that they've kind of won games recently, but still, I'm shocked at the fact that they've been able to rebound from what was a slow start.
Tennessee, the state of Tennessee, Tennessee basketball, Tennessee football, it is the sport embodiment of, it's the closest embodiment that we have to Cracker Barrel, right? you go into the state of Tennessee. Now, follow me here. He's wondering why I'm talking about Tennessee, okay? I'm about to compare South Carolina to something. I would love to do this for every single SEC team, but you just went to Tennessee, man. Everything there is wooden. Yeah. Everything is wooden. You know it's true.
Gray. It's always gray.
And everything is wooden, okay? There's a ton of old stuff everywhere, okay? You can drive on the interstate at every 5 miles or so. You're going to see a billboard for a knife store. You know, it's like, what in the world is going on? Okay, South Carolina is the embodiment of sandpaper in the SEC.
I can really and being able to
sand teams down and wear you down. That is South Carolina, 100%.
What object do they go up against when they can't sand an opposing team down?
I don't know. Everybody gets sanded down when they play South Carolina. Let's just be real. That is not a fun team to play.
Or South Carolina is only given a certain amount of time. They can sand anything, but sometimes it takes too long, and so the object itself wins out.
I mean, sandpaper doesn't win against steel. Let's be real.
True. Well, for anybody listening, give us a call. Tell us your confidence level, what you think about South Carolina tomorrow coming to Neville Arena to face Auburn. Give us a call here on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502.
To be fair, in all reality about South Carolina, joking aside, they haven't played the toughest schedule in the second half of the season. Best win that you can point to, probably LSU, maybe, other good opponents that they've played, they've clearly been outgunned whether they've played a Kentucky or an Auburn in the first half of the year. Alabama beat them significantly, like 19 points, I think, like that, 2 weeks ago. Or was that – that was last week, I think, that happened, right?
When what happened?
South Carolina played Alabama in the last 2 weeks.
It was last Saturday.
Alabama beat them by 19.
Run over by
and
Alabama.
So when they've played, and this supports the notion that they haven't played the toughest of schedules down the stretch, I think their best wins – I think they beat A&M, but their best win is undeniably LSU in the last five, six games. Outside of that, not overly impressed with the types of teams that they've played up to this point, beating a Vanderbilt, beating an Ole Miss here or there, even A&M when they were down. The South Carolina team has not played the toughest schedule. When they play good teams that absolutely have talent on offense, they lose. And sometimes they have the propensity to get ran out of the gym. They're an extremely gritty team. They're going to play hard. As Lance said, they are perfectly fine with strong-arming you and physically dominating you to put you on the foul line. They are perfectly fine with roughing you up, if you will, right? But at the end of the day, I don't think they have the horses on offense.
Nope.
To run with the top half, the top six, top seven teams in the SEC. They beat Mississippi State by 10 recently. Like, that impresses you a little bit. Like, that definitely caught my eye. I was like, wow, I thought Mississippi State was going to win that game. But they haven't beaten anybody that has the horses that an Auburn or a Kentucky or a Tennessee or an Arkansas is going to have at this point in the year. Those teams, and especially Auburn and Auburn Arena, there's no way. I'm having a hard time believing that South Carolina is going to keep this thing within single digits. I'm expecting double digits tomorrow.
I think you made a really good point talking about how defensively, you know, they're relatively sound, but on offense, they don't have the horses to get it done. And I mean, if you look at the numbers, just the numbers themselves, they are 281st in the nation in 3-point percentage.
Is that bad? Yes, it is bad.
281st. And sometimes it just like boggles my mind that there are so many teams in Division I. It's like, what, 358, I want to say?
358.
So 281st out of 358 in three-point percentage, 244th in two-point percentage, 309th in free throw percentage. Their effective field goal percentage is 272nd. And what's even worse is not only do they not shoot well, they turn the ball over a lot. They are 324th in turnover percentage.
Sheesh.
21.3%. And then you go and look on KenPom and you look at their game plan, which essentially you can look at all the different major statistics and break down how they performed against individual opponents. You go look at their offensive efficiency. When they don't play well offensively, they lose. It's so crazy how their game plan is split between wins and losses and how offense has so much to do with their ability to win a game. I mean, I can show you the chart, Noah, just to show you. Most teams have some losses up whenever they play well on offense. Like, normally, like, Auburn will have, like, two or three games where they play well offensively, but they broke down defensively. Almost the entire bottom half of their schedule is losses based on the fact that they could not play offense efficiently.
In SpongeBob, what was the, you know, with SpongeBob, this was an old SpongeBob episode, but he found himself below Bikini Bottom. Do y'all remember that? What was that called?
It was like super dark everywhere. He was trying to catch the bus. I don't remember what it was.
Bro, that's South Carolina's offense.
Going to Balloon World? It's just like, yeah.
South Carolina's offense.
Well, not being able to get out underneath Bikini Bottom. It's just like there's no escape, and there's no like way to figure out how to escape. It's just terrible.
Well, I've got the schedule right here on South Carolina. This, once again, supports the notion. These are the wins that they have had that they hold over SEC teams. Two over Vanderbilt. They beat, Georgia twice. So they've got two over Georgia, two over Vanderbilt. They beat Missouri once. So there's five of their nine SEC wins right there against literally three of the bottom four teams in the league. Then they beat Texas A&M. They beat Mississippi State. They beat Ole Miss. And they beat LSU. And literally the best win in there is a two-point win over LSU, a game in which they were at home. And then I think the next game that you would say, and granted they got A&M on the road when they were reeling, that was a part of their eight-game losing streak, so that was not even that impressive at that point. They had a significant injury at the time that they were trying to overcome. That was a really bad A&M team at that point. And then, so I would say the second best win that they have outside of LSU is beating Mississippi State, also at home, by 10 points, a game where Mississippi State only scored 56. They just don't have any impressive wins really in conference play, and you look to non-conference play too. Florida State by one in a neutral site game. Okay. It's, UAB by three. That's just impressive looking at what UAB has done over the course of the year, but they're not that good. They just have a lot of wins by playing a weak schedule.
I think it's really fair to make the point that their two best wins are at LSU and Mississippi State, because if you go and look at the offensive efficiency of every single team that they've played, the best two offenses that they've played efficiency-wise, I believe, are Mississippi State and LSU. And actually,
those aren't even that good.
Mississippi State is 58th nationally in offensive efficiency.
KenPom.
Thank you, KenPom. But you go look
LSU's,
at teams,
I think, in the 30s or the 40s.
They're actually 91st. Like,
no way. I didn't think it was that bad.
Like, Ole Miss is 106th. Wow. Texas A&M. Okay, I was wrong. Texas A&M is 73rd. So LSU's their third best win offensively. LSU is, they're 91st. Georgia is 95th.
Tell everybody where Auburn's at.
Ooh, let me go pull
they're
that up.
They're in the 20s, I think
they're 19th.
When I last checked.
They're 19th, yeah. 19th offensively, 7th defensively, both in adjusted efficiency there.
Ooh.
That's not terrible. I mean,
no, I'm not talking about Auburn. I'm saying, for South Carolina.
But when you look at South Carolina, their leading scores under 12 points a game.
Oh.
Like, they have no...
Is it a guard or a forward?
Yeah, forget all these big numbers. That's game right there.
It's a guard. It's
okay, at least
Jermaine,
it's a... Hold on. At least it's a guard.
Yeah, Jermaine Cuisenard is his name. Yeah,
and then also, Eric Stevenson is a shooter. We need to look out for him tomorrow as well.
But when South Carolina
only
has a guy...
only shooter?
It might actually... Honestly, if I go pull up their ESPN stats...
Is the only guy
stats,
on their team who can hit a three?
Might be the only guy that shoots over 35% from three. I'll go pull that up.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, but if you're a team like South Carolina and you don't have a go-to guy that can just bury somebody... Then, or just go out and just get a bucket.
That's why you
it's
can't
be
pull
tough.
Upsets.
That's why, especially on the road in one of the hardest places to play in college basketball. I just don't see it happening tomorrow inside Neville Arena.
They are truly the and man. Look at you, how you've just seamlessly transitioned to its Neville Arena. Look at
it's
you.
What it is, man.
That is what it is. No, you have prepared yourself well, man. No, I like it. It's awesome.
I
just saw on Twitter a fun video, a friend of the program, Nathan King from 24/7 Sports. He tweeted out a video of the players running up on the stage and swag surfing with Bill and Connie Neville.
Nice. That's awesome.
If you watch them at a basketball game, they're the most hype fans in the entire place, man. They get into it with the students because the student section is behind them on the end. Man, they get into it, man. So anybody that bashes them for having their name on the side of the building, shame on you. Because they've put a lot of money and effort and time into this program, into Auburn in general. So they deserve it, man. They really do.
Trying to remember where I was going with South Carolina for a second. Oh, yeah, you need somebody that can get you a bucket, like you said, to be able to pull upsets. And they are truly... the embodiment. They are truly the by-the-book definition. If you look up middling team in a conference, like middle-of-the-pack team in the dictionary, there's a picture of this year's South Carolina team next to it. Not good enough to beat any good teams, but just good enough to handle their business against the bad teams in the league. And that's why they're 9-8 right now. They're not a legitimate tournament threat. There are teams with worse conference records than them right now that are legitimate tournament threats to get SEC to get the SEC with seven teams. A Texas A&M who's 8-9 right now has a better tournament resume than South Carolina, and they had an 8-game losing streak in conference play.
Yep.
And if they make it to the semifinals of the SEC tournament, if they win out from that point to there, so that's three wins in a row from where they're at right now, if they do that, Texas A&M's in the tournament. Florida's another team that could possibly get the SEC to 8 if Florida were to do something similar. I think if Florida beats Kentucky tomorrow, regardless of what they do in the SEC tournament, I think it would be good for them to win in the second round, their first game of the SEC tournament. If they do that, they're in. Yeah. That could be 8 teams in the dance, guys, out of the league. And
it ain't happening.
Dude, he's about to have an aneurysm, okay? We found out yesterday he hates the SEC.
Oh,
so.
Really?
I don't hate the SEC. They're just not as good as advertised.
They are. It cannibalizes itself. It is that good.
And that's what I said was going to happen.
It's going to prove itself.
Texas A&M and Florida are not getting into the tournament. I will put... whatever amount of money, they're not making the tournament, man.
Both of them, no, but I think one of them does have a legitimate shot to do it.
They may have a shot, but it's not going to happen, I don't
Lance,
think.
Does Florida have a chance against Kentucky tomorrow?
We previewed this matchup on today's episode of Locked On Kentucky, and I noted that the Gators are terrible at rebounding. They put up a lot of threes, and they don't make them. They've been struggling to shoot the basketball as of late.
Don't hold back.
They had the slowest game of their entire season pace-wise against the Wildcats. And It was terrible in so many different ways offensively. Oscar Tshiebwe is playing out of his mind right now. I didn't say on yesterday.
Sevier Wheeler and Ty Washington are more healthy than they were last weekend.
All of a sudden, they decided that they can shoot. I don't know where that came from, but they decided that they actually
how did
know
they
to
look
the
against
basketball.
Ole Miss? Like, they had, looking at the box score, and I watched the game in studio. I was running the board for an Auburn High School baseball game earlier this week. I watched the game. Obviously, Kentucky only won by like 8 or 10 points. It wasn't overly impressive. I think Ole Miss gave them one of their better shots, right? But you look at the box score, and Sevier Wheeler and Ty Washington had one of their better games in recent memory. It seems like they're closer to 100% than they have been. They're at least taking steps forward.
I went on the Locked On SEC podcast recently, and I said, whenever I was asked about Kentucky, I said Kentucky has a similar problem to Auburn in the fact that they have not gotten incredibly efficient guard play here down the stretch, but it's for different reasons. Obviously, Auburn's healthy. Kentucky is not, but now that these guards are finally
Kentucky's point guards disappeared.
Yeah, they were without their starting backcourt for like 2 or 3 games.
It was Auburn basketball last year.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was Alan Flanagan types having to play point guard.
But to tie it back to the Ole Miss game, the guards for Kentucky in the Ole Miss game were just so incredibly efficient on offense. But defensively, there were a ton of breakdowns that I did not expect. And then also, Ole Miss just shot lights out. I mean, whether or not Kentucky had a hand in their face, they still had a couple of different players that were just knocking down everything. So that's not a huge concern. I don't think teams are going to shoot lights out against the Wildcats. But guard play offensively from Kentucky, really good against Ole Miss, in my opinion. I thought it was solid. Outside of Kellen Grady, who shot like 1 for 5. But I think that Washington and Wheeler specifically played well.
Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we wrap up hour number one on the show.
Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goetz, Noah Gardner, and Lance Daw. You're here for the entire show. Lance, good to hear that. We have just a few more minutes before we head to the 3 o'clock break and we come back for hour number 2. And Lance, I want to ask you a question. Noah and I had this question yesterday on the show. And
we threw hands.
Yeah, me and Noah went at it yesterday.
Was it a question or a debate?
We got off the air and it got physical. We took things outside.
Yeah, we fought in the parking lot. We rammed our cars into each other. We did a lot. No, but Lance, since you
did almost run into each other, okay?
Yeah, we did. We actually did. But since you do Locked On Kentucky, I want to ask you this question. Noah asked me yesterday. He said, right now, if Auburn and Kentucky were to meet in the SEC tournament championship game, who would win? I said Kentucky.
I said Auburn.
I would say Kentucky.
And we fought about it.
Why?
Not because I do the show and I've got like a bias towards the Wildcats, as everybody on this show knows.
Sure.
I'm an Auburn fan, all right? Through and through. 100%. If there's a Locked On Kentucky listener out there that just heard that, I didn't say that. But but I think that Kentucky has more efficient guard play, and I think that they've just simply got more dominant pieces on their squad that could take over a game at a given time, because if you shut down Walker Kessler, the team is going to struggle offensively and defensively. If you shut down Jabari Smith, I mean, Auburn's lost. They need their guards to really step up, whereas Kentucky, they could lose their starting backcourt and win 3 games in a row, which they did. So, I mean, Auburn's a really, really good basketball team. That would be a very, very fun competitive matchup. I would lean Kentucky right now slightly because of the way the guards are playing at the end of the season.
Let's head to the phone lines now. We got about 2 minutes. We've only got time for one caller here, and then we'll get to Ed on the other side of the break. But we've got Terry on the line with us now. Terry, we got about 2 minutes before we got to head to the end of the hour. So what's on your mind, man?
I just want to ask you guys what y'all thought about the article in the Montgomery Advertiser with the 14 high school coaches that said they hadn't had any contact with Brian Harsin. I know this has been heavily basketball this hour, and I respect that. But that article came out, I think the guy's name was Bennett Depo or something like that. Have y'all
Bennett Durando is who we're talking about.
My boy.
I have not seen that article, Terry. I have seen things about of some high school coaches that have come out and said that they don't know Harsin or have not been reached out. But I have not read that specific article. Noah, you said you have?
Yeah, I've been seeing stuff like that where a lot of high school coaches have been saying they've never met Brian Harsin, and I'm with you. That's not good, Terry. That is not good.
No, was this the 14 coaches of like some of the top players in the state, or was that?
I'm sure they have coached some of the top players in the state. Terry, when did you read this article? Just so I can go and fully get into it.
I guess a few days ago. I can't remember.
Okay, yeah. I'm reading it right now.
But that is something that is not just limited to this article. We've heard this since Brian Harsin's been at Auburn, that he has had struggles to, and he just hasn't gotten communication with high school coaches, maybe even outside of the state of Alabama. And that's a big problem, because as a head coach of a major university, you've got to go and talk to these coaches.
Yeah, sharing what you thought. Have a great day.
Thanks, Terry.
So in the article that he's talking about from the Montgomery Advertiser that was written by Bennett Durando, and I'm not going to, you know, by any means talk about, you know, every little thing in here because people should go and read it. But it says in the article, quote, it's a recurring theme. 7 of the 14 coaches who spoke with the Advertiser had not met Harsin.
Mm. And so this is in the state of Alabama?
Yes, I would assume.
Why do you think that is?
He just may have a different approach to recruiting. You know, I've never met Brian Harsin personally.
No, what did he tell you?
And that's not me trying to be smart with you. I definitely think there's a different strategy with this coaching staff, with Brian Harsin, than you see in the Southeast. Will it work? We're getting an indication. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Ed, hold on. We'd love to talk to you when we come back at 3 p.m.
You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Lance Dahl of Locked On Kentucky and Auburn Daily with us for the entire show today on the Friday edition of On the Line. It's been a good show so far. If you want to call in, phone lines are open, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502, just like Terry did just a second ago. And now we've got Ed on the line with us, starting us off on hour number two. Ed, what's up?
Hey, guys.
How you doing today, Ed?
Doing great. Beautiful day. I was just going to, I'm kind of right there with Terry on a lot of things. If you're an Auburn fan and if you're not concerned, you know, about recruiting, you know, and about the program in general, you know, maybe he can come in here and get three-star guys and make Auburn just a powerhouse. I don't know, you know. But the proof's going to be in the pudding, you know. And next year is going to be a pretty easy year, really. 2023 is what I'm worried about. But as far as basketball, you know, nobody wants to kind of mention the elephant in the room, and it's Alan Flanagan, you know. What do you think's going on, and does he keep getting minutes? What do y'all think on that, real quick?
You know, with Al, I think a lot of it has to do with coming back from such a disruptive injury like the Achilles tear, and like the mental side of that. And so, like, that's why I think people don't like talking about it. But the reality, and you're right, Ed, the reality of it is it's ugly. I think it's hurting Auburn basketball when he plays 28 minutes a game and he goes 1-for-6, has 4 points and 4 turnovers. That's bad, right? What was interesting, though, to the second part of your question about will he keep getting minutes, if you paid it, you know, and I know you were probably watching the game on Wednesday night, If most people may have noticed, he was not out on the floor in overtime, and he only played 19 total minutes across the game. When it came down to crunch time, that was the first time that I can think of that Flanagan was not on the floor.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, I've got all the respect for the young man. I am not bashing anybody, and I hope, you know, maybe, you know, well, when you say right now, if you say maybe he can win a game for us, I guess if he doesn't win South Carolina, he'll either win them. One, or, you know, because tournament time, then, you know, one and you're out. But and Wendell Green, have y'all noticed that it seems like every one of his threes are short?
It's because he's taking them from 50 feet away from the bucket.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't help. But yeah. Even some that are closer, it seems like he's short. I mean, to me, my coach, he would tell you got to jump more, or you've got to push more with your chest. It's just mathematics, geometry, whatever. You know, once you're 2 or 3 inches above where, you know, when you're standing, you're closer to the basket, actually, you know, so it's a different shot, whether you jump or you just kind of set shoot. But, I hope they gets it. I hope he gets it together and Zep, you know, I'm and KD, you know, proud of the whole team, but it's just, I know they could do better. But anyway, guys, thanks for taking my call and War Eagle, and hopefully this football thing, y'all need to get us some recruits, man. Y'all need to pull some strings for Auburn.
Well, and we appreciate the call. We will do our best to get Auburn football some recruits. We appreciate the call, Ed. That was Ed here on the line. He made a couple points that I want to touch on here. Start with football, and then we'll go back to basketball. When it comes to football, yes, you can be worried about recruiting. We've talked about this quite a bit on this show over the past 2 months. But I think there's some things that Auburn fans should be excited about. Ed was talking about, you know, fans should have reasons to worry. But I think there's also reasons to be excited for Auburn. I think, like he mentioned, the schedule is fairly easy compared to what most Auburn football schedules look like. And I think that is a huge positive for this team coming into the season. 2023 is the year that I think everybody agrees is going to be the make or break for this program. But I think the fact that Auburn was able to keep its head coach, he was able to hire guys that he wanted, I think all of those things, and the guys stayed on the team, I think all of those things are huge impacts for this Auburn football team. And now to transition back into basketball, he was talking about Alan Flanagan, and yes, the injury definitely has something to do with him not being the full version of himself, but I think one of the major things is him having to adjust to how different this team is from what he was on last year, because last year he was it. I mean, he was the guy playing a lot of guard, doing the scoring, dropping 20 points a game. He was the guy for Auburn basketball. And now look on the team this year. I mean, most of the time, the only impact he makes is negative, and I don't want that to be the case because I do like the guy, but he's negatively impacting Auburn, especially as a starter, and I don't know if his minutes will get limited. I think they probably will if he does not play any better than what he's doing right now, but ultimately, Auburn will be better if he plays better, so I don't want him to just crash and burn and just get put on the bench and never play, but if he doesn't get better, and this goes for anybody, if this goes for Wendell Green too, these guys got to play better to get more minutes to help and give Auburn the best chance to win a national championship.
To talk here for a second about Alan Flanagan, I'm going to end up asking a question to you guys about the small forward position and just the team as a whole. So Alan Flanagan and Devin Cambridge both have really struggled to kind of find their roles with this team, right? And I think they've been relatively inefficient. And sure, you could say Devin's acknowledged the fact that he's the offensive rebounder.
I think he has his role. He's just missing threes.
Well, I don't think that he has fully accepted his role as the offensive rebounder and the bouncy guy, because if he did, he would stop taking threes or he would take less threes. I think that part of his role is not trying to shoot as much as he does, considering he's shooting 14% from three. So I think acknowledging the fact that you're not a shooter and then kind of reserving yourself for different things and focusing on your strengths is going to be a part of his process, both for the rest of this season and both for next season. Who knows? He may get back to shooting 27%. And that's not a slight, like, all things considered, that would be okay on this team. And then also Alan Flanagan, like you mentioned, he's struggled mentally, I think, coming back from this ACL tear, and just about every single time he touches the ball, you get concerned. And so I'm sitting here wondering, how could this team improve with both of these guys? Because this is the lot that we have. These are the players that we have at the small forward position. How could they improve? And honestly, again, it goes back to, I think, just understanding their role and just working on what they do best. And I think that both of these guys have the ability to do different things very well. And I'm expecting them to both pick it up at least just a little bit here as the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament gets here. And then a question I wanted to ask you guys about the small forward position and then about the team as a whole. So recently on Auburn Daily, it was actually an article that was put out today. We did a roundtable with all the different writers over there. And one of the questions that was asked on the roundtable is, if you could add one former Auburn player to the current team, mm-hmm. who would it be and why? I said Isaac Okoro. And I said that he would be a very steady presence at the small forward position. He would make sound decisions, and he would be just a phenomenal player, I think, to add to this starting rotation. And then also there's that defense, and again, goes back to just the maturity with him. I think that he would be a really good player. What are y'all's thoughts on Flanagan and Devin Cambridge, and then who would you add to the team if you could?
Well, I think with Alan Flanagan and Devin Cambridge, I think, and let me say this, Devin Cambridge, when he has an open three, like from the corner that we saw a couple of times in Mississippi State, I like that shot. I want him to shoot that because he's proven that there are times where he can make that shot. Now, the offense should not run and work towards getting at, or getting Cambridge a three-point shot, but if he's got an open shot, I want him to take it. And then
I'm going to be real, man. Cambridge, he'll give you a three when you need it.
When you need it.
He may not when you want it. And yeah. It may contribute to you eventually needing a three because he took so many when we wanted them.
But he can knock them down when he has to.
I'm telling you, he had a big three in the Mississippi State
game. That's what I'm saying.
Auburn was needing a three, and he dropped one
in. And he buried it. And I'm okay with that. And then with Alan Flanagan, my take still stands. I think he's still struggling mentally. And I don't think it's physically. I think it's mentally from the injury and then from his new role on this team. But to answer your question, I saw that on Twitter, and my initial thought, my very first answer in my head was Bryce Brown for the three-point shooting.
Bryce
because this
Brown.
Because this team needs it, because Jabari Smith has been the only guy that can proven to shoot the three ball at any high consistent rate. That was my initial answer, but then when I broke it down, I said, wait a minute, Isaac Okoro on this basketball team, they would be unstoppable from scoring, defense, rebounding. He brings it all.
Or even like light version of Isaac Okoro, Malik Dunbar.
I almost put him. I'm dead serious. He was my first answer. He was my first answer. Then I went with Okoro, and then I said at the very end of my answer, Bryce Brown would also be a suitable fit because I guessed that I just assumed that all the other riders would say Bryce, so I went with Okoro.
You forget.
Most people said Bryce Brown, didn't they?
Yes. You forget that Malik Dunbar took a starting spot late in that Final Four run. Like, he emerged into the starting lineup. Like, he hijacked a starting spot as
forget.
The year went on. Like, Malik Dunbar is underrated. Malik Dunbar is one of the most underrated Auburn basketball players of the last decade.
He's amazing, but Isaac Okoro on this team with his skill set at all.
Oh, of course. If I get to choose anybody, it probably
but
is.
But also think about it this way. Think
I could
about
use another three-point shooter, though.
Think about if Bryce Brown's on this team and your starting is Zeb Jasper, Bryce Brown, and then Wendell Green and KD Johnson off the bench. Holy smokes, dude. That would be unbelievable. Bryce Brown in your three-point rotation? Man, it's like unbelievable.
If you could get just one consistent shooter on this team, game's over.
Like if
you get Bryce Brown on this team, game's over. But I trust my guards enough with this team to expect that they are going to get back to where they were at the beginning of the season, that I'll look to a different area on the team and say, let's patch the small forward position. Also, think about Okoro. He can jump like Cambridge. He can shoot a little bit like Cambridge. He can shoot a little bit like Flanagan. He plays really good defense like Flanagan. But the thing is that he just doesn't turn the ball over, and I think he makes better decisions overall.
So here is where I want to come in with my optimist nonsense, and I want to challenge you guys on why do we need to reconstruct the greatest Auburn basketball team of all time, where they're 26-4, and Lance, I'm not picking on you here. On the road, they do not shoot consistently from three, but away from road games, if they're at home or on a neutral site, how do we know that this team doesn't already have multiple consistent three-point shooters? Wendell Green Jr. at home is a fine three-point shooter. You know, of course, Jabari Smith is dead-eye from anywhere on the floor. Mm-hmm. Walker Kessler's even good for an occasional three at home, right?
But I'm taking Bryce Brown over any of those guys when it comes to shooting a three.
100%. I'm just saying I think it's a flawed premise.
Yeah,
for us to be picking apart this team to the point.
It's just fun, man. It's fun.
It is fun. I would love to see an all-time Auburn team with Auburn greats of the Bruce Pearl era over the last four or five seasons. That would be incredible, right?
Sharif off the bench.
Well, see, here's the thing. Somebody actually tweeted out about that, and they put Jared Harper on first team, and they put Cooper on the second team, and there were so many different people saying Sharif should be the starting point guard.
No.
Strongly disagree with that.
Well, and let me finish my point here about this is – I think it's a little extreme to be saying that, because y'all know this question is born out of the fact that there are a couple players that aren't performing right now, and that question would not be asked more than likely in the light that it is if Auburn was not having some struggles over the last month. You know, the tone in the question is very much so, how can we make this team better? They're not playing well right now. You know what I mean? Now, it's a fun question to say, how good could this team be if Isaac Okoro was on this squad, right? Like, I'm 100% in agreement with you guys there. But I also think you look at the team, and I think it's all there. We were talking yesterday, and Dan made some great points after I said this. You look at the team, and everybody's got problem in college basketball. You look across the top 10, so many of them have issues. If not, they have worse issues than Auburn. But here's the reality. Auburn has more solutions than everyone else in college basketball. What happened to the notion that this team was incredibly deep? It is incredibly deep. This team has an assortment of players that you can go to and win you a game. Think about this, all right? And you guys know this is true. Katie Johnson has single-handedly won Auburn a game this year. Jabari Smith has single-handedly won Auburn a game this year. Walker Kessler has single-handedly won Auburn many games this year. Devin Cambridge, across his Auburn career, has won Auburn several games single-handedly, right? Back, stretching back to his freshman year with Javon McCormick and all those guys. Wendell Green has single-handedly won Auburn a game this year. You can go to many different guys where they were the dude in one game this year, and they helped Auburn win it all, right? This team has more solutions than everyone else in college basketball. I legitimately believe that. You look at the Arkansas Razorbacks, what are they outside of J.D. Notae? And yes, you countered me yesterday and said, well, what's Auburn without Jabari Smith? Well, I can also say Auburn's got Walker Kessler and all these other guys.
I said without Walker Kessler.
Sure, and if you take any one of those guys off the team, and I'm not advocating that you take J.D. Notae. That's not the argument that I'm making. I'm not saying that you take J.D. Notae off of Arkansas. I'm saying outside of J.D. Notae on Arkansas, who else is there to help the man out when they have issues? And reality, nobody... There isn't, right? And I think Jalen Williams is pretty good, but you look at Arkansas as an offensive team, they're not that amazing. They're not. They're rather inefficient. You look at Auburn, they've got guys everywhere that you can turn to that can turn it on. And it just so happened in overtime against Mississippi State, it was KD Johnson. And I know Jabari had an incredible game, but it wasn't Jabari in overtime who put the thing on ice. Yep. It was KD Johnson, right? And so Auburn's got more solutions, I think, than most teams in college basketball that they can turn to.
This is also why, this is why I also think Kentucky's a really good team and can make a legitimate national title run, is because they've been without different pieces on their team, and they've still managed to win by very large margins, might I add.
More solutions
times.
Than Auburn, I'm curious.
Again,
you think they got more dudes than Auburn?
When you go for three straight games in the SEC without your starting backcourt and you win, and not only that, you were down by double digits in I think two of those games, and you managed to come back and almost take a 20-point lead in one of them. Kentucky's got guys.
They do have guys. I'm not down. I think they are a national championship contender.
Right.
We are talking about two of the elite teams in college basketball this year.
I would
year.
Say that it's very, very close. Like, if we were to watch these two teams play in the SEC tournament healthy, it's going to be a phenomenal game. I hope. But both of these teams are really, really good, and they have depth for sure.
And Kentucky played – it wasn't like Kentucky was playing slouches either when they were unhealthy. They were playing some of the best the SEC had to offer. I mean, they played Florida, Tennessee, Alabama, LSU, Arkansas, and, of course, Ole Miss is one of the best teams that the SEC has to offer, but it's not like they were beating bad teams mm-hmm. here. They were beating good teams.
Let's head to the phone lines here on the line, 334-321-1390. Steve is on line one. Steve, welcome in.
Hey, guys. You know, if you had told me at the start of the year we'd be where we are, you know, I would have taken that, you know, without hesitation. But you're talking about solutions, and maybe it's just me, and I've asked this question of a couple people, and nobody can give me a really good answer, why not? Why have we not seen a lineup of 0-12, 10 at the 3, 2 at the 4, and 13 at the 5? Our problem right now really is the 3. We're not getting any production out of the 3, rebounding-wise or scoring-wise. And 10 can play anywhere on the 4. It can probably play anything but the 1. And at no point in the season have I seen that lineup on the floor. And I can't think of a good reason not to run that for 6 minutes and see maybe if it gels. I mean, listen, I know people are dogging out on Flanagan. Listen, I've had that injury years ago when I was a young man and was in decent shape. It's a hard, hard injury. And he probably should have had the surgery and redshirted and come back next year. And I think he wanted to help Auburn win. And I bless him for the effort and bless him for trying. But he's just not there. And I don't think he's going to get better in the next 4 weeks. So you're talking about a solution. Why is that not a viable solution? And why do you think it hasn't been tried?
I don't have a great answer for you, but I will say this is my one hunch. This late in the season, Bruce probably doesn't want to make a whole-scale lineup change where one player, like that group may not be used to playing with each other. It could work. It could also be disastrous, but why not try it at some point? I get that sentiment, but if they try it in the wrong game or it produces a really bad six-minute stretch, that can lose you a basketball game, and it's been fine margins through the SEC where Auburn couldn't afford to drop a game. But I don't disagree with you that Jalen Williams should be getting more than a combined 15 minutes or 16 minutes that he's had over the last two games. Jalen Williams should be playing more. I mean, reality check is he's played 16 minutes over the last two games. Now, he's been in some foul trouble, but he should definitely be playing more. But I'll also say this, he didn't play that well against Mississippi State. He had one rebound. You know, that's not good enough. With him, when him and Dylan Cardwell play combined 26 minutes against Mississippi State and they combined for two rebounds, that's part of the problem with Auburn getting out-rebounded by 20. So I'm with you. I think the small four position is the issue for Auburn. At times it feels like it's 4-on-5 out there from an offensive and scoring standpoint. But I also think it's deeper than that, too. It could be they need multiple players stepping up that aren't giving them quality minutes right now.
Well, when you throw Dylan out there, you know, it's 3-on-5 because, I mean, he goes up and throws the high pick. He gets the ball, and it's going right back to the guard. I mean, they're not guarding him at all, and he's not going to step up and shoot three, which I understand. And they have lowered his minutes, and he's playing his part, and he brings the energy and everything like that. I just think there's a solution internally in the team, and Bruce has always sort of preached positionless basketball. And
Jalen Williams, you know, could do that.
It drives me crazy not to put the best five out there, at least give it a run. But, you know, hey, he makes a lot more money than I do, and he's forgotten more basketball than I ever know. But, hey, like I said, this team might turn it on. It might go on and win the national championship. We might get beaten the second round. But it's been great fun, and you know, I'm going to root them through whatever they do. But I just would love to see 6 minutes of that to either prove me right or prove me wrong. So, y'all have a good day. War Eagle.
You too, Steve. War Eagle to you as well. I'll add to this about why we haven't seen that yet. Bruce loves these guys, man. He's a player's coach, and Bruce trusts his players and gives his players more leeway than any other coach we see in the game of basketball right now, right? That's why he doesn't call timeouts, and sometimes that's got us pulling our hair out of our heads, but also, likewise, it's given us the wonderful moments like the Tennessee game and the SEC championship and in 2019 when Jared Harper has a wide open layup but instead shovels it into the corner and Bryce Brown knocks down a three, right? Those moments in Auburn's ascension right now and Auburn's recruiting is produced by Bruce Pearl's. A big factor in that is Bruce Pearl's trust in his guys and his love for his players and them taking responsibility in games. And the reality is Alan Flanagan was one of his dudes last year. He's one of the team leaders. You know it. And they all love Alan Flanagan. And so you don't want to take those minutes, right? I imagine it hurt to have Alan Flanagan on the bench in overtime on Wednesday night. I imagine it hurt. And it probably hurt Alan Flanagan. You know what I mean? And so it's easy for us to say, yeah, Auburn's having some issues right now at small forward. And that's no secret. I'll say this. He's had some good games this year. Now, lately, he's in a dry spell. It's not going well over the last 2 weeks, right? But he can, at some point, he could be the difference in a basketball game. And so you got to give him that trust, right? Now, I do think the minutes should be rather fluid based on how he looks in a game, right? You shouldn't just go in there with preconceived, oh, this is my lineups that I'm putting in every time. I think it could be a little bit more fluid than what we've been getting. But, Jacob?
Well, and I understand that. And I understand that Bruce trusts his guys and he wants his guys to be successful and all of that. But at the end of the day, man, you've got to do, as a head coach, you've got to do and make the decisions that gives your basketball team the absolute best chance to win ball games. And let's just be honest, guys, this isn't hating on Alan Flanagan, but he is not the answer at the three position or in the starting lineup that gives this team the best chance to win because of his performance on the floor.
My response to that, and I get your point, that's easy for me, you, Lance, to say here in the studio, but we're not the one with the actual relationship with the kid.
I agree.
We're not the ones with the actual relationships in the locker room. And the reality, in the business of dealing with people, I would rather have a coach that loves his guys too much rather than is willing to cut a guy for not cut him off the team, but just cut his minutes loose because he's not producing or something like that. Because once again, I go back to, that's part of the overall culture of the program, and that's part of what's produced Auburn to where they're at right now, and their ascension is Bruce's trust and the fact that he is a player's coach. That's why Auburn recruits the way they do. That's why they get guys here. That's why Jabari Smith's playing at Auburn, guys.
But you can only do that for so long. I mean, in my opinion, I think you can only do that for so long because eventually it's going to come back and bite you, and it's going to add up.
I don't disagree, but has it really? guys, we're 26-4. I'm not
but
trying to take
about
the DeVita's.
If Flanagan was putting in better minutes and not turning the ball over four or five times and was dropping eight to 10.
And
that's it.
And that's what you need. And I said the minutes should be more fluid, right? I did say I don't think you should go in with preconceived this guy's going to play regardless of whether or not he's producing or anything like that. I don't want people to get that mixed up. I'm just saying I think people should pump the brakes a little bit and understand the culture and the relationships that are built here. And that it you know, I would rather have a coach that loves too much because I don't think he can, right? And I think that's a big reason why Auburn's where they're at. Nobody's going to be perfect, and I don't think you can make perfect decisions in real time. I think the fact that Auburn's 26-4, it should be enough for people to trust the situation and where it's going, and that we should just save our breaths of worry and everything until we see this team playing tournament time.
I'll say this, then we can discuss this more on the other side of this break. I agree with both of y'all's points. I'll say it's not that it can only happen for so long. I think every season it can happen to an extent because it may prohibit Auburn from winning a national title. The lack of discipline on the offensive end may cost Auburn a national title consistently. If they're good enough and talented enough to make a run, if they don't get hot like they did in 2019, who knows? Their ceiling may be prohibited by the lack of discipline on the offensive end.
Let's take a quick break. You're listening to On the Line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Just a few minutes here before we head to the national break, and then we'll come back and continue our discussion about Auburn basketball. We've been talking about maybe some of the changes that fans would or would not like to see on this team. A lot of discussion has been about the starting five and whether they produce at the highest level that they can. And Lance, you had a statement right before we went to break. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I just wanted to repeat what I had to say. Obviously, I think that Pearl is a very, very good coach, and I think the caller made a really good point about the fact that, you know, Pearl gets paid to do this, and he probably knows or has forgotten more basketball than I will ever know or Steve will ever know. I think that's a really good point. But it does not remove the ability to criticize him, right?
And no, he's not above reproach.
Exactly. So I think that it's very fair for Steve to say, you know, let's take a look at some of our lineup issues. And even Coach Pearl said that after the Mississippi State game. Somebody asked him in the post-game press conference, hey, why did you go to a lineup of Green, Jasper, Johnson, Smith, and Kessler? We've not seen that three-guard lineup. He said, well, whenever things start to not work, as a coach you get desperate and you start throwing stuff out there and see what makes the wins, what makes the flag sail. And so it's just trying to work on different things and adjusting things. And I think you made a really good point, Noah, about how you can't necessarily do that a ton here at the very end of the season. You've lost the opportunity to really make huge adjustments with this team, and you have what you have right now, and potentially changing it drastically could harm your team. A team's ability to make a legitimate run.
It could also destroy a guy's confidence,
exactly.
Right? And you never know when you're going to need him again. And so that's where I was going into. In the business of relationships, I would rather have a coach like Bruce Pearl who maybe trusts or loves too much, because I think there are benefits. We talk about all of these decisions like they're in a vacuum, like it doesn't like hit Bruce's personality or the way that Bruce makes decisions doesn't affect how he makes other decisions, right? Mm-hmm. But Bruce's personality and Bruce's decision-making process, just getting into the philosophy and the psychology of it all, affects everything else that he does inside the program and everything in the culture of the program and how guys are recruited and whatnot. And I would rather have Bruce Pearl trusting guys too much to the end, right? Even to a loss. I would rather have a coach like that, because you know what? It's going to pay dividends and talent acquisition and getting guys to want to play for you. Eventually, it's going to work, man. He's been at two different programs where he's coached teams to number one in college basketball. Isn't he like the only coach to have done that that's currently active in the game right now? Maybe
especially
even ever all time?
In the same league.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But there's no doubt, before we head to the break, there's no doubt that whether the coach trusts his players too much or not enough, there's negatives to both sides. And I think there's a time where if you trust the guys too much, it's going to cost you games. Or if you don't trust them enough and you slice and cut them out right there, that's going to cost you games as well. But you've got to figure out what's best for your team right now.
I'll say this, you know, in my little basketball simulation game I have on my phone, I've taken four different SEC teams to number one. Auburn, LSU, Florida, and Georgia. I'm just saying, I'm
a pretty
good coach.
Do you cut players loose on a whim?
No, I let everybody play.
Wish we had more Leo Berman, I'm not going to lie. Let's take a quick break here, 30 more minutes left.
Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today on the Friday edition of the show. Just about 30 minutes left. Lance Dahl in the studio with us. He's been with us all for the first hour and a half. If you missed any of the first hour and a half of the show, just look up On the Line wherever you get your podcast. Let's head to the phone lines now. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Dan is on the line. Welcome in.
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys?
We're doing good. Dan, what you got?
Yeah, you know, as far as the three-point shooting goes, you know, I don't know if you realize it, but Zeb Jasper is shooting almost 39%. And he just never really shoots that much. But two of the last three games, you know, he was 3-for-4 last game, and then two games before that, he was 4-for-5. So that's a guy who can get us a good shot if we give him a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, Jabari's shooting lights out from three. But you have to think, you know, you're wondering, like, I mean, I sat in the game, and every time that Cambridge got the ball in the corner, I was like, don't, you know, after he missed his first three so badly, just like, please don't shoot, please don't shoot. But the problem is, they're tightening up on the inside, and they're leaving him wide open. He's just got to make that shot. If you're wide open, I mean, if you can't make that shot and you're a guard, I mean, you shouldn't be playing basketball. You just got to get it going. And unfortunately, he's always been a streaky shooter. You know, when he's hot, he's super hot. And then when he's cold, he's like ice cold. So, you know, it's like, you know, and then Alan Flanagan shot about 35% last year from three. And then he just hasn't gotten it back. But what I would like to see more with him is us having plays where he's going to the basket, catching the ball, going to the basket instead of trying to create. Because obviously he doesn't have his ball handling back that he had a year ago. And, you know, he's having the turnovers and stuff. So, you know, but going to the basket and when he's catching the ball within 10 feet, he's a really good guy at shooting that little short jumper, the little, you know, jump hook or getting all the way to the rim. So, you know, I just think we need to utilize our guys. You know, we just got to figure out, you know, if a guy's just not hot, you know, then we got to find a way to not put him in a position where he just can't make the shot. And you know, you can't blame Bruce on some of the coaching. I mean, guys, if they get the open shot, they got to make it. I mean,
yeah.
You know. And you can say other teams, every team has weaknesses. You look at Kentucky, they have the one guy, Grady, who can shoot great. He's a great three-point shooter. But there's nobody else on their team that shoots three-pointers very good at all. You know, but then their strength is they got, you know, Tshiebwe, that's, you know, a fantastic rebounder and a pretty good scorer down low. I mean, every team's got their positives and has their negatives. But, you know, just like you guys were saying earlier, we have guys that can – get hot and make shots. I mean, KD Johnson had a lot of games in the middle of the season where he was draining a bunch of threes, you know, in the same game, back-to-back-to-back. And even, you know, I think the big thing with Wendell when it comes to threes is just if he takes his time and tries to find a better shot than just pulling it up from deep. Now, look, if he's wide open and it's in rhythm, I don't have a problem with it. I just don't like it when we're on a fast break and there's nobody there to rebound, so it's either he makes it or he does. And I just think being a little bit smarter and try to be a little bit more efficient on offense, you know, could go a long way. But, you know, but like I said, yesterday I said the last comment I'll make. But, you know, look, I'm not afraid of playing any team. I think we can beat any team out there. You know, we just need to play good. If we play good, if we play our good and they play their good, I think we would beat most teams. But if we have five guys that – just decide to go ice cold, well, then, you know, it's going to be a long day, you know.
And that's true for anybody out there. I mean, I'm sure you've seen what Kansas has done over the last three games. They have not been good, right? Dan, I agree with you, man. Appreciate the call.
Thanks.
I mean, you guys have watched Kansas? I mean, we all thought Kansas was going to slap TCU last night. Yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah, after that Kentucky game, I've got a different opinion of Kansas. It's like you go into Allen Fieldhouse, you go into the fog, and you win by 20. Kansas has not been the same team in my mind since, and we've gotten to see them fall apart here a little bit down the stretch. I really, really appreciate the fact that he started talking about Zeb Jasper there at the beginning of his call, because something that I wanted to talk about a little bit on the show today, and I'm glad we've gotten around to it, is Jasper in conference play is Auburn's best three-point shooter. He's shooting 42% from three, and that's better than Jabari Smith, who's shooting 40% in conference play right now. So Jasper is a little bit of a scorer. Some people might have forgotten. I believe he averaged over 15 a game at Charleston last season. I mean, he's got a little bit of a shot. He can shoot. And I think Pearl has definitely told him, and I think this is the right way to approach it, is, look, Katie Johnson, Wendell Green, we're trying to encourage them to shoot a little bit better here down the stretch. I need you to be more aggressive as my starting point guard. I need you to be taking some more shots. And Jasper's answered the call. And he's been able to knock down some shots. Couple that with the fact that he's incredibly careful with the basketball. He's been playing really well for Auburn recently.
And look how confident he is when he shoots the basketball. Yep. When he steps up to the three-point line and sets his feet and shoots, I mean, he's a confident shooter just like Jabari is. And you have a high level of confidence in him to make that shot. So I agree. And I hope that Bruce is telling him that and that he needs to be more aggressive. Now, he doesn't need to take 15 shots like Wendell Green does. But if he can take 8 to 10 shots and knock half of them down, which I think he can do, especially going to the rim, I'd like to see him do that some more as well. Zeb Jasper can be a legitimate starting point guard in the NCAA tournament. Not that he's not right now, but...
He would be like somebody that you highlighted and be like, that was one of the guys that really contributed.
Yes, exactly. He would be one of those elite guards that you see national champions have. Could be Zeb Jasper down the stretch.
Y'all know who Zeb Jasper reminds me of, at least his career trajectory at this point. And keep in mind, he's got another year, right? And
he does?
He does have another year. He reminds me a lot of Javon McCormick.
I was literally going to say it's like Javon McCormick in our Final Four, right? He was shooting 50% from three.
Yeah, at that point, but he had only taken like 33s, right? Sure. But I agree with you. That's where the heart of this message is coming from.
He has that it factor.
He's got the offensive ability. He's explosive off the bounce. He may be the quickest player on the entire team, okay? And that's not hard to say. You would imagine one of your point guards would be the quickest player. He's definitely faster than Wendell,
he's
right?
He's got a cool name.
Zep definitely sounds like somebody would be fast if he had that name, right? He's explosive off the bounce, not necessarily in terms of bounciness, but in terms of off the dribble, he can get to the rim quicker than his defender. He could shoot a high percentage from three. If you remember at College of Charleston, he was shooting nearly 40%. He was definitely a volume guy at College of Charleston. He shot 14 shots a game back at College of Charleston, right? That disappeared because he's clearly the fifth scoring option when he's out there on the floor. I don't know why that is. I don't agree with it. I think he should at least be fourth, but he hasn't been, right? But we've seen great things come out of this backcourt when he is more aggressive shooting the basketball and when we do get this guy's shots. He couldn't end up being the catalyst that Javon McCormick was in the early stages of Auburn's tournament run in 2019. I see a lot there. Now they're completely different players. Obviously, Zeb Jasper is bigger than Javon McCormick. Javon McCormick was a lot faster. I mean, they were different players.
But Zeb plays better defense.
In terms of their offensive aggression, right, the trajectory for Zeb Jasper really feels like the same trajectory that Javon McCormick took back in 2019.
I almost think it's more dangerous in a way because McCormick was a really, really good finisher at the rim. Jasper, not so much, but he's a really good outside shooter. At least he has been in conference play. So both of them, I think, like you said, dynamic offensively but in different ways. And so I think he could definitely be that spark.
And think about if Zeb Jasper does start to get more aggressive going to the basket and being able to finish at the rim, then they're going to back off of him and let him shoot from the three, or they're going to press up on him and it's going to go right around him. And then what sets him apart from Javon McCormick is his elite level of defense. Besides Walker Kessler for blocks,
it's hard
Zeb
for
Jasper,
someone who's 5'7" to play elite
defense. Exactly. But besides Walker Kessler, Zeb Jasper's the best defender we have. And he does that from the guard position, which is not something you see a whole lot of. He has a lot of potential on this basketball team. He could really cement himself this year in the tournament. And then, yeah, he has an extra year, Lance. So he'll be back for Auburn next year, and he's only going to get better.
I'm going to be real. Javon McCormick is not 6 feet like AuburnTigers.com says. Now, he ain't 5'7". Okay, forgive me. He's not that short.
He's 5'10".
He's probably like 5'10", but he ain't 6 feet like Auburn said he was.
But if you looked at him, he looked taller than what Wendell Green looks like on the floor, did he not?
Nah.
I'd have to go back and watch. Nah. It's been a while. I'll say this, though. Man, if Zeb Jasper gets it going in the NCAA tournament, think about how much more difficult this offense becomes to stop. I mean, people have really, really honed in on Auburn's guard play. If Jasper is the one that really starts to make it click, that makes it so difficult, and it makes teams have to adjust, and then all of a sudden, there's Auburn's offense again, scoring about 80 a game.
And think about, to go on, that's a great point. If Zeb Jasper starts becoming a guy that can drop 12 or 15 points a game and he has more assists than he normally does, think about the pressure that takes off of Wendell Green and KD Johnson for them to now do what they want to do and shoot the basketball and run up and down the floor, get into the lane, try to get to the free throw line. Think about the pressure that takes off of them from the defenders. This offense would be rolling if Zeb Jasper would be doing the things that we think he can do.
Well, let me tell you who would also take pressure off of Jabari Smith on the pick and pop. Because if you run that with Jasper and he's a legitimate threat to shoot,
nobody respects the Auburn guards on the pick and pop.
Once, if you make opposing teams respect your guards, boy, does that make that difficult.
If you've
to stop.
Noticed, they are basically
they stick with the big man every time.
They follow Jabari everywhere he goes, which makes sense.
Same thing with Walker.
But yeah. Auburn's guards don't do anything
off
to make you concerned about their ability to score off of the pick and roll. They don't do anything.
To Jacob's point, they'd have a really difficult time getting downhill, and it goes back to what we were all saying at the beginning of the show. High ball pressure. If you commit to the guard, or if you commit to the big man and just put pressure on the guard, he's not going to be able to drive past you. He's not going to be able to shoot over you because he's smaller than you, and it makes you have to reset things offensively. And so teams have had a really, really easy time stopping Auburn's pick and roll game and their pick and pop game recently. But again, if we can get Jasper specifically, I know that Wendell Green can shoot. I know Katie Johnson can shoot. If we can get Jasper to play a solid 15 minutes a game and get 12 to 15 points a game and make teams guard that shot, makes this offense incredibly difficult.
The way that Auburn, and I've seen this, this has been how teams guard Auburn's guards. This is how teams defend Auburn's guards for years. I've been seeing this all the way back to when Auburn was struggling tremendously in 2019 before they went on that tournament run. And I was amazed at Auburn being able to break out of it. And they kind of broke out of it just by getting really, really hot from the three-point line. Like, the guards still didn't get downhill. They just knocked down shots. But teams hedge Auburn's guards. Mm-hmm. Like, the defender stays for only a second. It may be for just a moment, you know. And it's not like they're completely leaving their assignment either, like a Jabari Smith or a Walker Kessler. But they are hedging the guards when they apply that high ball pressure up top, and Auburn tries to run the pick and roll, and like, you've got a double team, and they've basically created a perimeter around you, a semicircle in front of you. They're not dribbling around that. And if they do, the opportunity has been lost because for them to get a pass off, because by the time that they get around the two defenders, the other defender has already retreated back to his assignment. The play's burned. You just spent 7 seconds trying to get around on your own pick and roll, and you've burned a third of the shot clock, maybe more, because it takes you 6 seconds to get the ball up the floor.
I was just about to say
that's
so
what I was
going to
say.
You really are only working with a 24-second NBA shot clock, and Auburn spends half of that just dribbling around, and then the worst thing that could happen to Auburn is that they run into a team in the NCAA tournament like a Texas Tech that switches everything. Well, not just slow, but that switches everything, that can defend positions 1 through 5 easily. Like, hedging doesn't affect them. They're easily able to do that. And they press.
Yep.
Full court press.
Auburn really
would destroy this team. They haven't. I'm shocked nobody's tried it yet. Missouri did it a little bit, and it would be catastrophic.
Do you know who
Auburn.
That describes almost perfectly? It describes LSU. They press, they hedge,
Auburn didn't
and
play
they,
that well
they switch
outside
more,
of the first 10 minutes.
They switch more than anybody in the country. So
you're right.
LSU would to your point, I was actually about to say this, and I need to go back and watch the Missouri game, because Pearl said all the way ahead to the Oklahoma game, he said, look, Missouri guarded us a specific way, and it really bothered us.
Well, everybody's been hedging since the Missouri game.
Right. We need to go back. I want to go back, and I want to watch that game, and then I want to see, how did Auburn approach that beforehand, and how could they maybe adjust some things a little bit?
So the difference between this team and the 2019 and how the 2019 team figured it out, that team could shoot, right? Yep. The guards found ways to hit some really difficult shots. They made teams respect that three-point ability. It opened things up a little bit. They found another way to score rather than just on the pick and roll, right? Newsflash, guys. And I do think they do have the scores, but the reality is this is one of the poorer three-point shooting teams that Auburn has had in recent memory. So they do need to improve in that area. I do think they have the shooters that can give you the threes when you need them, but they're not necessarily giving you a high enough efficiency from beyond the arc to really kind of change the dynamic with the way that teams are guarding Auburn. Simply put, Auburn better start burying shots, or we're going to continually be grinding through games. But the reality is Auburn's defense is good enough to carry them a certain way in the tournament too. It's just going to come down to Auburn hitting shots.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll wrap up the Friday edition of On the Line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner, and Lance Dahl with you today on the Friday edition of the show. Just a few more minutes before we get out of here for the weekend, fellas, but As of this morning, Joe Lunardi released a new and updated bracketology. And Noah, I texted you about this because if the tournament were to start today, the NCAA tournament, three SEC teams would be in the same region. It would be Auburn, Kentucky, and Arkansas, all in the same region. Gentlemen, what do you think about it?
I think the biggest travesty here is that Arkansas is still regarded as a five seed.
What do you think they're worth?
I think they're worth a four at least.
Yeah.
You know, Tennessee has a worse record than them, actually. Has a worse record, two less wins, one more loss. Tennessee has a worse record. Arkansas's beaten all three of the other top four teams in the SEC, right? Really, there were, you know, you talk about the loss to Hofstra and that little bit of a stretch at the beginning of conference play where they went 0-3. Like, that's really bad, but I mean, they're 14 of the last 15, and you've got them as a five seed, or 15 of the last 16, they're a five seed? What?
Sounds familiar.
But I do think if they beat, it does sound familiar. It sounds familiar to that 2019 Auburn team. These teams are vastly different, but the trajectory is similar, right? I think if they beat Tennessee tomorrow, they jump to a four seed. Tennessee may drop to a four as well. You could see both of those teams kind of level out.
I think the biggest disgrace of those three teams being in the same region is that at least two, if not three, could all make a legitimate run to the Final Four if they were in their own bracket.
Why the question then is, why would Lunardi project, or if this becomes reality, why would you stick three teams that could potentially make a Final Four run within the same region of the bracket? And I guess the point would then to be to limit.
I mean, it happens.
The point would be to then limit, like, how many teams an individual conference can get to a Final Four. But at the same time, if they're worthy of doing that, if they're worthy of getting to a Final Four, give them the best shot to do so.
Yeah, I think... You can take the bracketologists are going to do their best job to get all the seeds correct, to get all the teams correct, right? It becomes more difficult. We wake up on Selection Sunday, we see the bracket thrown out, and it does look a lot different than the way that the bracketologists mapped it out in terms of where the sites are actually at and where the regions they're actually at, right? Like, it changes on a day-to-day basis in the bracketology, which region Auburn may be in, other regions white, the bracketologists are clearly trying to get the seed lines and the amount of, and the right teams in the field, right? That's what they're trying to do. And I think it's a little bit, I don't read too much into who's in their region in the bracketology, and because the reality is a lot of times that ends up being wrong. Mm-hmm. I could be off a little bit on that, but the odds of this being what the field looks like on Selection Sunday is slim to none, guys. Yeah, it is. And now Auburn still could end up with two other SEC teams in their region, but you know, I don't think the committee's looking too far into that when they make their decisions. I think a lot of it's just they scrub the teams, they rank them 1-68, and a lot of times they end up being wrong.
And you're right. You're right about that. But one matchup that I did want to look at that's been pretty consistent over the last couple of weeks is in the Western part of the bracket, as Gonzaga's the one seed and Bama at the five seed. And as that could be a Sweet 16 matchup, a rematch, that's been a pretty consistent over the last couple of weeks in Lunardi's bracketology.
And I don't want to go another, because you just reminded me of this out on the West Coast. The last time we had Lance on the show, we got a little vocal about his love for the Pac-12.
The
Pac-12 current regular season champion at Arizona. After the Colorado catastrophe, are they still the one seed in your mind?
Yeah, I think so. I think
there's more doubt there.
No, I definitely think that they're a one seed.
Even after Stanford last night?
No, I do believe that they're a one seed right now. And a lot of it does go back to the way that their offense has been playing this season. I think they're incredibly sound, and they have the pieces to make a legitimate run. And I think that based on the way that they've won some of their games this season, you look at the other teams that could be potential one seeds, I think you can make an argument for Arizona to be a one seed over some other teams.
So the other two seeds on this list right now, I think Kentucky and Duke are very close in ability. I think both of those teams are better than Arizona, and I think they'd beat them by 10 right now.
Okay. I don't know about Kentucky because of their lack of a legitimate post presence outside of Shibue.
But you love this team. You love this Kentucky team.
But if you
earlier you told me they were a national championship contender.
They are, but here's the thing, right? I did this like 2 weeks back. On the Locked On Kentucky podcast, I gave 10 different teams Kentucky matchup-wise would struggle with. Arizona is one of them because You look at Arizona, incredibly fast, one of the tallest teams in the entire nation, similar to Gonzaga in the way that they run their
stuff.
Those
two don't go together a lot of times.
Right, right.
Size and speed.
I was telling you about Hoops Vision during the break.
Yeah.
There's a video on Arizona that he just put out recently about their offense and how they are almost incredibly similar to Gonzaga. In fact, Tommy Lloyd was an assistant there for 20 years. So, duh, go figure. But anyway, Kentucky at times this season, whenever they have gone against a team that has a legitimate post presence that is talented, not just big, but also talented, Tshiebwe offensively has struggled. And as the guard play has continued to get slightly worse as the season has gone on, partially due to injury, partially because the SEC is so difficult, you know, games have gotten a little tighter. And Tshiebwe's had some moments where not only has he struggled offensively, but defensively he can't handle a guy that's 3 inches taller than him and also knows how to play a little bit of basketball as well. So you look at Arizona, not only do they do that, not only do they have two guys that are like 7 feet tall and can run the floor and one of them can shoot the three, They defensively know how to play. They're the best team in the nation in 2-point percentage allowed. So how would Tshiebwe match up against that?
I just don't trust Arizona's resume and who they're playing. Like, I think it could be a Gonzaga syndrome where they're weakened by who they play on a regular basis. I'm extremely bothered by the occasional night where they get upset or they play someone like Stanford. Arizona was
losing
minus 4,000 going into yesterday's game.
Like they were losing
at
halftime.
That was one of the heaviest favorites yesterday. You would have had to have bet $4,000 on Arizona to make $100. They almost lost.
What was the final score?
They won by 12, but they were down at halftime. But the problem with Arizona being a one seed is...
They were down by double digits at one point.
Yeah, the two seed behind
81-69.
The two seed behind Arizona is Kansas in their bracket. And I don't see Kansas jumping up to a one line right now.
No, sir.
Oh, I mean, it isn't necessarily just because it's their bracket that they have to jump up. I think Duke and Kentucky are the two closest to getting onto the one line.
But as long as Arizona doesn't lose, then they're not going to lose their one seed.
I don't know. That's it for another edition of On the Line. We'll be back with you on Monday. Have a good weekend, everybody.